This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today, we feature part one of a special two-part program featuring Pat Metheny. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. We're very pleased to welcome Pat Metheny.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for making time to come by and talk shop with us here. Certainly very few listeners will need an introduction to you or your work. Without question, one of the most influential musicians across genres, but certainly in jazz in the last 40 years. Dozens of recordings in multiple formats, including, of course, the Pat Metheny Group, as well as all kinds of collaborations and also solo projects as well. 20 Grammy Awards, even more nominations, and countless other awards and honors. Pat's most recent recordings include Tap, 2003 collaboration with John Zorn, Unity Band in 2012, and What It's All About in 2011. I think where I wanted to start, Pat, was maybe just digging into the three most recent recordings, if I could, just real quick, and maybe just ask a question I'm sure you get a lot, is how do you kind of conceive of these multitude of projects that you're involved in, and then find a way to balance them all out, and then have the content be as high and the quality be as high as you have all these years.
Oh, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, it's true. There's a wide range of ways of thinking about music represented in that batch of records that is really just kind of a direct result of, you know, what I love about music. At the same time, I'm not really interested in sort of an eclecticism for the sake of it. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, there is a continuity also that I think, hopefully, over 40 years or whatever, most people can tell it's me pretty quickly. There seems to be some kind of a thing that connects all this stuff, and to me, that it's sort of the way all of those records fit together is the larger, more important message of whatever my thing is than any one particular part of it. I sort of feel like music is one big thing. I don't really think about, okay, well, this is jazz, mm-hmm. this is rock, this is pop, this is classical. To me, music as it exists at this moment in time, it's much more common for me to find somebody who's a music fan who listens to Stravinsky and the Beatles and Beyonce and whatever, as opposed to somebody like, man, all I listen to is, Elliot Carter. That's mm-hmm. all I listen mm-hmm. to all day long. So I'm kind of like that in the sense that I grew up with records and radio and everything else. And it's been a very natural, organic thing for me as a musician to try to manifest a variety of sounds and or approaches to music throughout the course of my life. And those records kind of are a pretty good little, specimen of mm-hmm. of that output, I guess.
Well, you mentioned growing up with records, with the LPs. Kansas City, obviously, is mm-hmm. where you're from. I wanted to just kind of ask about what that scene was like, not just the music scene. I mean, I know you've spoken to that quite a bit in your other interviews, but also just generally growing up in Kansas City and how that influenced you as a musician and just as a person.
I was very lucky just through the chance of chronology and geography to wind up there at the time I did. I mean, Kansas City in the late 60s and early 70s was still a place where there was quite an active music scene, particularly in the area of music that I, kind of was interested in. There were a lot of organ trios, a lot of that kind of sound, and a certain kind of social platform that kind of music fit in perfectly with, mm-hmm. and it just also happened that there were not many guitar players around Kansas City at that time, and I got a lot of great gigs as a 13, 14, 15, 16 year old kid by default that I probably should not have gotten, but mm-hmm. I really ended up learning how to play from being around great musicians on the job. Besides that, I mean, I actually didn't grow up in Kansas City. I grew up in a place called Lee's Summit that's about 30 miles outside of Kansas City. And at that time, it was far enough away that it was really a distinct other place. Mm. That's where my dad grew up and his dad grew up. And it was really like a farm town. So, that sort of, open space thing has mm-hmm. always been a big part mm-hmm. of everything for me. Mm-hmm. So, I kind of was lucky to have a certain proximity to Kansas City where there was this great scene, but also having grown up in a place where there was a lot of, room for things to happen, I think aesthetically affected me a lot.
Thank you.
I was listening to an interview online, and I'm trying, maybe USA Today, and I love this quote that you swing for the fences in your work. And I love the analogy, and this is in terms of audiences, in terms of when that music is fully going to be appreciated. Bright Size Life, initially, as you said, it sold like a nice 900 copies or something. Mm. And now it's recognized in the Smithsonian as a classic album.
Well, you know, I think that's true, you know, kind of across the board. You know, okay, we all have this incredible feeling for Charlie Parker, right? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, one of the great musicians of all time. But for sure, most of the people that, you know, let's say there's, I don't know, what, 10 million people on the planet who understand the importance of Charlie Parker. Of that 10 million, 9 million, you know, 800,000 of them were probably not on the planet at the time he was playing that. Mm. And while he was playing it, he was considered to be a great jazz musician. But I think it took some time for people to understand that this is one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think often about Bach. You know, that's one that I think's almost indisputably, if not the greatest musician of in human history, one of the handful of the greatest musicians ever. So the guy's writing, you know, music for church services each week in Leipzig. Yeah. You know, how many people came back after the service and said, "Man, J.S.
Yeah.
Killing today, yeah, this week," right. you know,
maybe love that motif.
Today. Yeah, maybe a couple, but yeah, right. Probably, you know, the majority of the congregation, you know, had abscessed teeth and, you know, whatever else, whatever other problems they had that, you know, were much more important to them than, mm-hmm. you know, the amazing, you know, fugues and right. details that were, you know, laid out there by Bach. So, you know. And even he's an example of somebody that it was many, many years before even musicians sort of got hip to how mm-hmm. how much was happening there. Right. And I think that's kind of par for the course in a way. So my basic philosophy, and having experienced it a little bit now, as you described with Bright Size Life and other records, I don't worry too much about how things are perceived at the time, including audience reaction while we're playing, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a way you can play where you can get people going woo-woo all night long and all that. You know, I'm not really that interested in that. I've never really been about that. I try to play good notes and you know, I think a lot of times people don't even really notice it, in, you know, that much. Like, wow, that was a really good solo. You know, it seems like sometimes those ones, you know, I almost get no response, you know. Mm. But I have to say it works the other way too. You know, it's like you can have a guy in the front row of a gig and he never claps for any tunes, and you know, he doesn't seem to be enjoying it. He's looking at his watch and you know, he's not really a participant in the, you know, anything. And then that'll be the guy that after the show comes back and says, "Changed my life, man."
Yeah.
You know. And so you just, my thing is, you don't know. Mm-hmm. You do your best. You swing mm-hmm. for the fences, try right. to play the good notes, do what you believe in, that you feel strong about. And really, other than that, there's not much to say.
Well, again, referencing that same interview in regards to Bright Size Life, I love this part of the interview where you said the first eight notes of that recording kind of set the path for everything that followed.
Well, you know, I was very lucky at that time. I've had a lot of lucky things along the way. One of the luckiest was that I was sort of, I guess you could almost say, discovered to a certain degree by Gary Burton. Gary's band was my favorite band. I finally got the chance to play with him. And he finally hired me at the time I was about 18. And at that time, ECM Records was just starting. And right away, the guy that runs ECM, Manfred Eicher, offered me the chance to make a record. And Gary very effectively said, "Don't make a record. Wait. Mm-hmm. Wait until you are really ready to make that first record." And it was very good advice, because in that year, whatever my thing has sort of wound up being through the experience of playing night after night with Gary and everything else that was happening at the time really crystallized into something that it probably would not have been had I just jumped right on it at age 18 and not waited till I was, you know, 19 and a half or 20 or whatever it was. I mean, it, you know, at this point, it doesn't seem like that long, but when right. you're 18, exactly. a year is thing. Like, yeah. you know, an eternity mm-hmm. to wait. But it was very good advice. And finally, I think that compositionally, what what I came up with that becomes the, you know, what the Bright Side's Life record is about. You know, it's pretty robust in the sense that I can still play those tunes now, and sometimes do. They still, it's, there's a sort of valid platform there that is strong enough to still revisit after all this time for me. And that may not have been the case had I rushed into it a little bit more.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Pat Metheny. And Pat, I wanted to ask you about your general sense of melody. It occurs to me that in all the stuff that I've heard over all these years, there's such a strong sense of melody, and regardless of the format or the genre, obviously it's something that is so central to your work.
Well, to me, melody is kind of, you know, I mean, we all define music as harmony, melody, and rhythm. I mean, but Melody is the one that is, of the three, that is absolutely the most mysterious and difficult to describe or quantify. I mean, you know, harmony, we can talk about chords, and this is a major chord, this is a minor chord, you know, this is a diminished chord, you add, you know, you stack four notes and you get these different kinds of relationships, and then you have inversions of those relationships. It's almost mathematical in nature. Rhythm, very similar. We can break down triplets, duplets, there's a lot of things you can talk about. Melody, like, where do you even begin to talk mm-hmm. about it? Where, how do you even describe what it is? For me, melody is something that is much more abstract than what it. There's a sort of almost cliche thing of the melody is this, you know, sing-songy thing. I think it's actually quite a bit more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. Because, for instance, Max Roach, a great drummer, is an unbelievably effective melodic soloist with there not being any changes in pitch in the overt way. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, for me to find a younger player who is a really good melodic player is almost impossible. It seems to be something that has very little interest to most players. Mm. I hear lots of young guys who can play all kinds of real fancy technical stuff and, you know, is unbelievably advanced harmonic stuff. But for me, the real telling thing about the way somebody plays is how they play a ballad. Also, melody for me has to do with, it's very closely related to development. And the whole thing of taking an idea and then letting it sort of unfold over a long period of time is something that is a real priority for me. And it seems to be something, it may have a little bit to do with our culture right now. I tend to hear musicians who are dealing in very short sound bites rather than long paragraphs and, you know, expansive, you know, like mm-hmm. connected ideas. And that for me, again, is something that I don't know, and I can't worry too much about how much people are perceiving that, but that's a big topic for me, is that thing of connectedness.
Pat, to follow up that discussion of melody, I wonder if some of that has to do with the fact that you're finding fewer and fewer younger players who are connecting with that, what you're looking for in melody. You've always had a real fondness and a respect for well-written pop songs. And I'm wondering if some of that has to do with, not to be like a couple of middle-aged guys going off here, but distinct melodies in popular music, which inundate us all around, it seems like it's harder and harder to find those for me. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that, you know, every era has a sound and a vibe and a feeling. This era right at the moment is absolutely about rhythm. No mm-hmm, question about mm-hmm. it. This is a rhythmic time. And in terms of groove, even though a lot of it is, you know, sort of not necessarily of human origin, but there is much more grooving going on now than there has ever been in human history. Mm-hmm. And solid grooving.
Yeah.
And interesting, fantastic, new beats and new ways of thinking about rhythm. I mean, this is a kind of almost golden era of that. You know, my thing is, why are those things mutually exclusive? Mm. Why couldn't there be somebody who's dealing with melody and harmony, you know, right alongside with those things? Right. And some of it I do understand. There's a certain power of almost hypnotic effect that happens when rhythm is the prime motivation for a musical gesture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that describes a lot of what's happening in the pop culture world right now. But, you know, I anticipate there being moments in the future where harmony and melody play an equal role in that. Mm-hmm. It's bound to happen.
Thank you. your own fondness and respect for well-written pop songs? You know, obviously you've recorded some of your solo recordings are specifically, you know, Norah Jones tunes and stuff like that, which goes back, you know, I would assume back to your beginnings. Where did that come from? And where, talk about that attraction to, you know, like a good pop melody.
Well, you know, I guess for me, I don't really think about pop, jazz, rock, country, folk, classical. To me, I think about music, and the things that make good music are the same, regardless. Yeah. You know, the rest of it is kind of a political discussion about, you know, like, okay, is this pop or is this rock or is this emo or is this, you know, I mean, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, you know, I'm not too interested in that aspect of it. I'm more interested in the kind of, you know, nuts and bolts of, okay, this kind of interval combined with this kind of chord adds up to, you know, X, you know, and you find those same kinds of connections whether you're listening to Ravel or whether you're listening to the Beach Boys. I mean, there, you know, there's a lot of things that connect there, and for that matter, they can show up in odd ways too. You know, it could be, you know, a Paul Motion drum solo or something. I mean, it's like there are aspects of how music moves through time that are appealing to me that you find kind of in a transcendent way to any kind of style. And that's what I look for.
This is John Floridas. You've been listening to part one of a special two-part musician spotlight featuring Pat Metheny. If you'd like to contact us, you can send us an email through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us at our own website, musicianspotlight.org, and as well through Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as from iTunes. Special thanks to the Crown of the Continent Guitar Festival for this interview. Tune in next week for part two of our special two-part Musician Spotlight featuring Pat Metheny. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.